A father teaches his son that honesty separates good people from bad ones. Days later, standing at Disney World's ticket counter, he lies about the boy's age to save $117. The child's confusion cuts deep. "Daddy, you told me only bad guys lie, and you just did." This moment reveals something profound about human behavior. We constantly send mixed signals, saying one thing while incentivizing another. This disconnect shapes everything, from parenting to corporate culture to public policy. Companies preach teamwork while rewarding individual performance. Governments promote environmental responsibility while subsidizing pollution. Schools emphasize learning while obsessing over test scores. The pattern is everywhere once you notice it. Our incentives betray our stated values, and people inevitably follow the money, not the rhetoric. What makes this particularly fascinating is that incentives don't just motivate behavior, they communicate what truly matters. When a CEO talks about long-term vision, but bonuses reward quarterly earnings, employees receive a crystal-clear message about priorities. Think about that Disney World dilemma. What could the company do to reduce dishonesty without creating hassle through documentation requirements? The solution is elegantly simple. Require that children be present when purchasing tickets, or have the child state their own age. This forces parents to either lie directly in front of their children or pay the full price, a powerful signal about honesty that aligns words with actions. The challenge isn't just designing better incentives, it's understanding how they function as a language, sending signals that can either reinforce or completely undermine everything we claim to believe. This principle permeates organizational life. When managers emphasize customer care but pay call center workers by calls answered, employees prioritize speed over service, potentially dropping complicated calls or rushing customers off the line. The stated value means nothing. The incentive structure reveals the truth. The most damaging mixed signals occur when organizations pursue contradictory goals, inspiring innovation while punishing failure, stressing quality while paying for quantity, or championing collaboration while rewarding individual achievement. Employees aren't confused. They simply follow the incentives and ignore the inspirational posters. This pattern holds across cultures and contexts. Ancient China paid paleontologists per fossil fragment, causing them to smash valuable bones. Soviet glass factories incentivized weight, producing nearly opaque glass, then square meters, resulting in dangerously thin glass. When Chilean bus drivers' pay changed from hourly to per passenger, they became more efficient but also more aggressive, causing more accidents. People optimize for whatever you measure and reward, often with unintended consequences. Remember this Seinfeld episode where Jerry's $182 cash gift felt thoughtless while Kramer's cheaper bench delighted Elaine? This distinction between cost and communication drives successful business strategies. Toyota's Prius provides a masterclass in effective signaling. When Toyota and Honda both launched hybrids in 1999, conventional wisdom favored Honda. Their hybrid looked normal, eliminating the sacrifice of driving something different. Instead, Toyota's distinctive Prius dominated. Early hybrids were objectively inferior, more expensive with less speed, acceleration, and comfort. But these drawbacks created a powerful signaling opportunity. By choosing a Prius despite its limitations, buyers demonstrated environmental commitment. A 2007 study found 57% of Prius buyers chose it because it makes a statement about me, versus only 36% citing fuel economy. Toyota's second-generation Prius featured a distinctive, recognizable design, unlike Honda's camouflaged hybrids. This visibility allowed drivers to signal their values publicly while reinforcing their self-image as environmentally conscious. Social signaling improves our image with others, while self-signaling provides internal satisfaction from acting like good people. These forces sometimes conflict. Consider Jane, a lawyer who donates blood periodically. The slight discomfort enhances her self-signaling. She's sacrificing for others, while also providing social proof when mentioned to friends. Joe, a secretary, making less money, would rather spend time driving for Uber to supplement his income. The economics reveal signaling's complexity. Hospitals pay about $570 per unit, but donors aren't paid. When monetary compensation like $50 is introduced, everything changes. Jane can no longer signal altruism. Money clouds her motives. Joe might start donating if the incentive is large enough. Payment doesn't just change behavior, it fundamentally alters what that behavior means. Restaurant experiments showed these signals sometimes conflict. When customers paid anonymously, they paid more than when observed. Being watched reduced the self-signal's value. Small non-cash incentives, like pens or medals, work without compromising the altruistic signal, enhancing rather than replacing signaling value. Susan manages a call center and faces a classic dilemma: compensating Jack. Pay him hourly and he might browse Facebook. Pay per call completed and he'll rush customers or drop difficult calls. This quantity versus quality problem has plagued organizations throughout history. Tel Aviv's minibus drivers, who pocket passenger fees directly, drive dangerously, often departing before passengers are seated. Rideshare companies solve this by adding ratings to their pay-per-ride structure. While taxi drivers on fixed wages lack motivation, and those paid per ride sacrifice service for speed, Uber drivers must maintain high ratings to keep driving. Healthcare faces similar issues. Physician mothers receive 7.5% fewer C-sections than non-physician mothers, suggesting medical knowledge counters financially driven recommendations. If all patients received physician-level treatment, C-section rates would drop and hospital charges would decrease by $2 billion annually. When you push people to increase one dimension of output, you create unintended effects on others unless you explicitly measure and reward what matters most. Companies that encourage innovation but punish failure kill risk-taking. True innovation requires embracing failure as learning. Edison tested 6,000 materials before finding the right light bulb filament. Organizations that innovate analyze mistakes openly rather than treating them as career-ending disasters. Blockbuster's collapse illustrates avoiding change. The video rental giant collected $800 million annually in late fees from 65 million frustrated customers, creating perfect conditions for disruption. After a $40 late fee, Reed Hastings founded Netflix with a subscription model eliminating return deadlines. When Hastings proposed partnership, Blockbuster's CEO dismissed him. While Netflix innovated with streaming and earned $116 million by 2009, Blockbuster lost $516 million. When CEO Antioco finally attempted transitioning to digital, the board rejected his vision, fearing the $400 million cost, and fired him. Richard Branson exemplifies the opposite approach. Launching over 400 companies, Branson embraces risk and learns from failures. When Virgin Cola flopped against Coca-Cola, he learned to only enter markets where Virgin could be palpably better than all the competition. His risk-seeking spirit permeates Virgin's culture, rewarding learning, not just winning. We consistently overestimate future self-control. Gym data reveals this. 11% of annual memberships are purchased in January, yet 50% quit by month's end. The critical question: can incentives create lasting behavior change? Change happens incrementally. First-time gym-goers struggle with even 10 minutes, but continuing builds habitual stock, practice that makes exercising less painful and eventually enjoyable. University experiments offered students $25 to visit the campus gym once, then randomly gave some $100 for 8 more visits over 4 weeks. The results were striking. During the incentive period, gym visits spiked dramatically. More importantly, even after payments stopped, the incentivized group visited twice as often as controls for 7 more weeks. This improvement came entirely from previously irregular gym goers, suggesting monetary incentives can help form exercise habits by pushing people past the threshold needed for consistent activity. Social connections amplify exercise incentives. When researchers mapped friendship networks before assigning gym incentives, they found incentivized participants visited more frequently when they had more incentivized friends, but less frequently when they had more unincentivized friends. Incentives work best when they help people overcome the difficult starting phase while building social support that sustains behavior after the money stops. When Israel introduced a 3-cent plastic bag fee in 2017, bag usage dropped 80% in the first year. Success came not from the tiny charge, but from the clear signal that environmental protection was a priority. Ohio's million-dollar lottery for vaccinated residents proved less effective than New Jersey's free state park admission or Connecticut's free drink program, smaller incentives that connected vaccination with supporting local communities and returning to normal life. The lesson: incentives function as a language, and clarity matters more than volume. A small incentive that tells a coherent story, one aligning with our values and reinforcing our identity, often outperforms a large incentive that contradicts our principles. When designing incentive systems, ask, what signal am I really sending? Does it align with what I'm saying, or am I creating mixed signals? People don't follow what you say, they follow what you pay for.